For Pacifica Radio, April 11th, 2024. I'm Scott Horton. This is Anti-War Radio. All right, y'all, welcome to the show. It is Anti-War Radio. I'm your host, Scott Horton. I'm editorial director of antiwar.com and author of the book Enough Already, Time to End the War on Terrorism, among others. And you can find my full interview archive, more than 6,000 of them now, going back to 2003, at scotthorton.org and at youtube.com/scotthortonshow. All right, and our first guest on the show today is Dave DeCamp. He's our news editor at antiwar.com. That's news.antiwar.com. And also he hosts the great podcast, Anti-War News. Not to be confused with Anti-War Radio, where he's a regular guest. Welcome back to the show. How you doing, Dave?
I'm good, Scott. Thanks for having me back on.
Very happy to have you here. So let's talk about the bad news from sadist land over there, Israel, Palestine. And in fact, let's start with the international war. As we covered last week, the Israelis bombed the Iranian consulate, or was it actually the embassy in Syria? And all the breathless headlines are predicting Iranian retaliation any day now. So what do you know about all that?
Yeah, so this is what we're seeing from, you know, U.S. and Israeli intelligence sources speaking to the media. We've just seen reports all over the place. Basically, the U.S. is expecting Iran to retaliate against Israel for bombing the consulate building in Damascus, and that they're expecting a direct attack, missile or possibly drone attack, on Israeli territory. And it's important for people to know, I'm sure people who listen to this show or read antiwar.com understand, that Israel has a long history of killing Iranians in the region, both in Syria, in airstrikes in Syria, and in covert attacks inside Iran. But this really was a huge escalation and very brazen. I mean, they bombed it's a consulate building that was part of the embassy compound in Damascus. They bombed an Iranian diplomatic facility in the middle of the day. And these IRGC officers who were there thought, you know, they were getting targeted by Israel a lot more since October 7th, but they thought they would be safe in the diplomatic compound. But no, in the middle of the day, Israel bombed it. So Iran is usually very restrained in their responses to Israel, if they respond at all. So we have to keep that in mind, that the Iranians are probably calculating that Israel's trying to provoke a major war here. I mean, that's seems to be their goal, is to get the U.S. to directly intervene. So now we have the U.S. and Israel saying that they're preparing a direct attack. And the U.S. is essentially saying that if that happens, that they're going to directly, you know, they'll probably try to intercept some missiles or drones to help Israel, and then they might be involved in any sort of Israeli counterattack. Israel saying that they're going to bomb Iran directly if Iran attacks them. And if Israel really wants to carry out airstrikes in Iran, they're going to need U.S. support for that. So there's just this risk of a all-out war here between Israel, Iran, and the U.S. would, of course, get involved. So really the question is, what is Iran going to do? Again, they know what Israel's trying to do here. They've said it, you know, they've called this Netanyahu's trap publicly, you know, in a warning to the U.S. to stay out of it. So, you know, it's kind of everybody's on edge here, I guess, to see what the next move is.
Yeah. Well, look, I think the reason they do this is because they know that the Ayatollah will let them get away with it, because what's he going to do? He doesn't have a land army to field. He can shoot some missiles at them, but then the war only escalates from there. You know, usually when this happens, they bomb Americans in Iraq with a deniable, you know, militia proxy or something. I don't know if they're going to do that this time, but I don't know. I'm not predicting that the Ayatollah is about to shoot all his missiles over Iraq and Jordan to try to hit Israel with them and get most of them shot down anyway, probably.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, that's what they're predicting, but I would be surprised if that's what Iran does here. But we'll see. I mean, there have been reports. Really, this was just one report, unconfirmed, in Arab media, that said Iran is telling the U.S. get a ceasefire in Gaza and we won't retaliate, which might be possible. I think it's clear that if there is a ceasefire in Gaza, mm-hmm. that everything's going to calm down in the region. And that's why Netanyahu doesn't want one.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised if that's a message that Iran has sent.
It's Anti-War Radio, talking with Dave DeCamp from antiwar.com. And did I read you right here that the Israelis also bombed the Syrian Arab Army as well as Iranian targets there?
Yeah. They bombed them the other day. This week, they launched some more airstrikes in Syria.
And I'm only half kidding when I ask, was that indirect air support for al-Qaeda forces on the ground there or not this time?
Not this time, as far as I'm aware. But yeah, you mentioned there were recent times where Israel is bombing Syria, and then you see the attacks from al-Qaeda against the Syrian military like at the same time. But yeah, this is something I cover all the time. Israel's been bombing Syria for years. They bomb the Syrian military all the time.
Yeah.
So that's not really anything new. But again, this thing with Iran, and they killed a senior Quds Force commander who they say was the highest level Iranian general to be killed since the U.S. killed Soleimani back in 2020. So again, it is a big deal. And, you know, I don't want to downplay the potential for escalation here because, you know, at some point Israel's going to go too far and, you know, we'll see Iran do something. But, you know, and another thing to keep in mind is the fact that Israel has nukes. And if we see what Israel is doing in Gaza, all the atrocities that they're committing there, they're a complete, you know, rogue state that is, armed with nuclear weapons. So that's also in the calculations for the Iranians as well.
So, but tell us about the escalation between Israel and Hezbollah, or de-escalation as it may be there.
Yeah, I mean, so it's been pretty steady. Almost every day we see Israeli airstrikes against Hezbollah and, rocket fire across the border. So that hasn't de-escalated. I mean, there were some instances where Israel really launched some airstrikes deep inside Lebanon that thought, you know, could have led to a bigger escalation, but it still hasn't really gone beyond that, the kind of trading fire across the border. A lot more people have been killed on the Lebanon side, over 300 people, and I know a lot of civilians as well. So that's always a risk, and that's something, and we see all these threats from, you know, Gallant, the Israeli defense minister, all the Israeli officials basically threatening full-blown war in Lebanon. And it looks like Mossad just took out someone in Lebanon the other day who was accused of being a Hamas financer in an assassination. So it's just, you know, always something that could explode. But again, Hezbollah is not showing any sign that they're interested in a big war. So, but there's still always that risk.
Hey, you guys, did you know that I don't just write books, I publish them? Well, the Institute does, and I'm the director, so yeah. 13 of them now, including my 4. We published 5 more in 2023. Lori Calhoun and Tom Wood's books about the COVID regime, Joe Solis Mullen on the fake China threat, Jim Bovard's latest, Last Rights, and our managing editor Keith Knight's Domestic Imperialism. And we've got more great titles coming in 2024. Check them out at libertarianinstitute.org/books and help support our anti-government efforts at libertarianinstitute.org/donate. And thank you.
Hey, y'all, Scott here. Let me tell you about Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Inc. Who knew? Artificial bank credit expansion leads to price inflation and terribly distorted markets. If you've got any savings left at all, you need to protect them. You need to put some, at least, into precious metals. Well, Roberts & Roberts can set you up with the best deals on silver, gold, platinum, and palladium, and they've been doing this since 1977. Hey, if you just need some sound advice about sound money, they're there for you, too. Call Tim Fry and the guys at 800-874-9760. That's 800-874-9760. Or check them out at rrbi.co. That's rrbi.co. You'll be glad you did.
All right. So I love the headline. It's, you could frame it. Biden walks back. Call for Israel to declare a ceasefire.
Yeah. You know, the thing is, I fell for it, I guess, because there was this interview with Biden that aired on Tuesday that it was actually recorded last week. And he said Israel needs to call for a 6 to 8 week ceasefire basically right now. They have to get all this aid in. And he wasn't linking it to any kind of hostage deal. So it did seem like kind of a change. And I had a story on that. But then after that interview came out, the White House walked it back. And then Biden said yesterday that it's up to Hamas. You know, it's all linked to this hostage deal that he's not saying that Israel should call for a ceasefire. So it was stupid of me to think that he had a change, you know, because I'm looking at things. I see more and more Democrats coming out saying to cut off Israel, especially after they killed those World Central Kitchen aid workers. And so I thought maybe this pressure is happening. You have all these protest votes in the Democratic primaries, but still he's not budging. And then so there was the Israeli withdrawal from the south. They still have troops there, but they pulled them out of, you know, the areas around Khan Yunis and everything. So the tempo has kind of slowed down a bit. We're still seeing airstrikes, and looks like a few dozen people just in the past few days have been killed each day. And you have Israel threatening, you know, saying that they're preparing to invade Rafah, the city in the south. So, you know, who knows exactly how things are going to go from here. And it's tough to know with the ceasefire negotiations. They're still happening. There was reports that said William Burns, the CIA director, actually met directly with some Hamas officials in Egypt. But it's just tough to really gauge it. I mean, you see all these reports. There's progress. There's no progress. There's, you know, it seems like Hamas is still calling for a permanent ceasefire and Israeli withdrawal. One thing that I think got overlooked by a lot of people, Haaretz reported a couple weeks ago that Israel thinks only between 60 and 70 of the Israeli hostages are still alive out of the 130 or so who are there. So Hamas might not have that many hostages to release. And that also said it could be less than that. And I know the deal that's on the table that they've been discussing is releasing 40 hostages for like a 6-week ceasefire. But you know, if Hamas does that, you know, their leverage, any kind of leverage that they have, if they give up all the hostages, is gone. So it's tough to imagine that any kind of deal is going to happen. And Netanyahu clearly does not want a ceasefire, even if he's just going to keep this thing going at kind of a low tempo. If he stops, it's going to be much harder for him to restart everything.
Has there been an improvement since the attack on the aid workers there, the amount of aid trucks allowed in and that kind of thing? Has there been any real change there, or just a little bit of rhetorical change?
Yeah, well, so it's hard to gauge. So Israel said that they let a bunch more aid trucks in. They claimed over 400 aid trucks went in, you know, a couple days in a row, and that was the highest number since October 7th. But then the UN is saying that they're inflating the numbers, because what they do is they require all of the trucks to be inspected when they're only half full. So that's when Israel counts the trucks, and then they repack everything. So they're saying that the real total is like, you know, half of that, like around 200 something. But there has been, it does seem like there's been a bit of an increase, at least. I know someone who has family in northern Gaza who said they got chicken for they got like real meat for the first time. But overall, I don't think it's just a drop in the bucket. It seems like when it comes to the people who are really starving in Gaza. And Israel said that they were going to open the northern border crossing, the Erez border crossing into northern Gaza, where you know, it's the worst situation for the people are the most food deprived there. They still haven't done that, as far as I'm aware. And that was a week ago that they said they would do it. So they still haven't done that. And, you know, you
what
see
about
Biden.
All the mixed signals about the attack on Rafah? You have a story where the defense ministry says, no, we're not. But the prime minister says, yeah, just give me a minute or something.
Yeah. Yeah. So Netanyahu said he set a date. He said, you know, it's all planned out. We have a date set. So he said that publicly. And then apparently Gallant, the defense minister, told the U.S., no, we don't have a date. So it's tough to know. I mean, you know, why is Netanyahu threatening that? I saw some reports in Haaretz, other Israeli media, you know, quoting U.S. Israeli officials who think Netanyahu is trying to sabotage hostage negotiations by basically saying, you know, any ceasefire is temporary. We're going to invade Rafah. So it could be part of that strategy. So it's tough to really know what their next plan is. But Gallant also said, the same defense minister who said there's no date set, he also said when they announced the withdrawal that they were doing it to rest and prepare for the invasion of Rafah. So he's, you know, they're all saying that they're going to do it.
Yeah, I mean, that's what makes sense for them to slow down on what they were doing, was to prepare for the next stage. Mm-hmm. It was, in other words, a tactical change, not a strategic one. All right, now give us just real quick here. I don't even know what it's worth. Seems like going out pretty far on a limb. The president let it be known that he's considering pardoning Julian Assange.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you know, again, this is Biden saying something, so take it for what it's worth.
They
but
walk
still
it back,
I mean,
any moment.
Yeah,
he didn't mean that, never mind that.
I don't know if I saw the video. I don't know if it was when he was with Kishida, but it's when he's hosting the Japanese prime minister, and he was just walking along like with his head down in a journalist asked him, like, are you considering, you know, asked him about Australia's request to drop the charges against Assange. They asked a few times, and then he finally stuck his head up and he's like, I'm considering it. And then he, you know, went on his way.
Oh, okay. But, so it was no prepared statement in the first place or anything. He was just trying to get her to leave him alone.
But still, I think it's significant in that, you know, the president said he's considering dropping the charges. So it's a good time to kind of get it in the news and increase the pressure. I know WikiLeaks is asking Americans, you know, the way that Americans can put the pressure on the U.S. government is by contacting their representatives in the House. There's a bill, the bipartisan bill that was introduced by Paul Gosar, who's a Republican, and it calls on Biden, the president, to drop the charges against Assange. So you could call your representative, tell them to become a co-sponsor of that bill, get them thinking about it, bother them about it. You could send emails and phone, make phone calls and stuff. It's a good opportunity to do that. And there was this report about a plea deal that they're thinking about. So there are signs that they're thinking of changing course. So I think it all also depends on what the London High Court rules. They basically, they gave Assange the chance for a limited appeal on certain grounds, but the U.S. has the chance of, they said that the U.S. can give them assurances, and that can basically mean that there will be no appeal. So we'll see what happens with all that. That's going to happen this, the deadline for the U.S. I forget the exact date, but I think it's sometime this month.
All right, you guys, that is Dave DeCamp. He's our news editor at antiwar.com and the host of the great podcast Anti-War News as well. Thanks very much, Dave.
Thanks, Scott.
And that's it for Anti-War Radio for today. I'm your host, Scott Horton. I'm here every Thursday from 2:30 to 3 on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA. See you next week.